Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, guys. We are coming at you live and direct from the quiet streets of Brantford, Ontario. This is Proteus's Pantam Show. And at the moment, Proteus is by himself, but I'm going to give you the call-in number right now, because one thing that Joe always said to me was, you never give out the call-out number on your show. 646-668-8160 is the number. We are live and direct. We are taking calls. We want to hear from you, Junkie Nation. We want to hear from you if you're not part of Junkie Nation. If you're a new listener to just this show and you have no idea what Junkie Nation is, call anyways. I really want to talk about MMA. That's why I'm doing this show. I mean, it's 10:30 at night where I am. All you left coasters, call in. I want to hear from you. What you say about UFC 203? What do you say about UFC 205? What's going on in New York? You know, that card is shaping out to be real good, and we've really only got one fight that we know about right now, as far as I know. So let's get into it. You know, whatever you guys want to talk about, we'll talk about. And I may be here again, like usual. I may be here by myself, and we may have no show. We may go 20 minutes, and I'll be talking to you again for 24 minutes all by myself, answering questions like Dean was making fun of me the other day. At least you weren't answering your own questions. Yeah, but you know what? When you have to talk to yourself for 24 minutes, that's what you got to do. So anyways, did anybody else watch that press conference, that press conference today? Did CM Punk look like Skeletor to you as well? Because he certainly did to me. And like a friend of mine said from Latvia, he messaged me earlier on today. He said, "Oof, I'm concerned about CM Punk making weight." I mean, that's going to be the first thing. I don't know, man. I think this guy has bitten off more than he can chew. And I had someone come at me on Twitter, and hopefully that person calls in and tells us how he really feels. And he was challenging me. He said that we, you know, not just me, but the whole show yesterday, the Smack My Picks Up show, that we were being very hard on CM Punk. And I really hate that I'm talking about CM Punk at the top of the show right now, but apparently that's what you all want to talk about. You want to talk about Phil Brooks, his chances in the UFC, and how everybody's being so hard on him. Well, we're being hard on him for a reason. He's got no experience. He's got no fights. Zero. He was a professional wrestler. Is that hard? Yeah, that's hard. It's very demanding. And as he pointed out at the press conference today, you know, it is a 365-day job. You know, it's very hard. It's very demanding. And, you know, they do take knocks, and they do have a challenging job. Of course they do. But it's not cage fighting, you know, and nothing is predetermined here. And I hope and we're after hours, so I hope for fuck's sakes that it's not predetermined. I hope that we don't see the fixes in on this at all. And we brought up last night whether or not CM Punk will get another fight after, you know, win or lose. Will he get another fight? I think he will. I think he'll get another fight. I think that his first fight will bring some eyeballs. As much as I dislike it, I think it'll bring some eyeballs. It'll bring some attention to the sport. And, you know, as this fella on Twitter was saying to me, you know, you're being hard. I'm like, no, I'm not. I don't think anybody should get a chance like this, you know, just because of their popularity. And that's why he's getting this shot, because he's popular. He brings a following. But the question is, will that following follow him? You know, will we see these wrestling fans or so-called CM Punk fans follow over? Will we see them bring the numbers that the UFC is probably expecting? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, and we're going to find out on Saturday whether or not he's a draw. And can he continue to be a draw? If he loses, and he loses really badly, can he continue to be a draw? I don't know. So, I just don't know what the answer is to this question. Then we're going to find out, you know. And hopefully we get a good fight. If we don't get a good fight, we don't get a good fight. Like, it's on the main card. It's on the pay-per-view card. You know, you've got a fighter who is 2-0 and a fighter who is 0-0 fighting on a main event card, a pay-per-view that you have to pay $60 for. That's just incredible. That's just outrageous. And I don't know what to tell. I don't know what to say about it, but hopefully it all works out. And I'm super stoked for Alistair Overeem and Stipe Miocic. That's just going to be an incredible fight, guys. Whether you, any way you slice it, you know, I mean, Overeem has all that experience. Stipe is, you know, tough as nails. I think it's going to be a great fight. Oh, I'm really hoping for a great fight. And Fabricio Werdum is selling the fight, the rematch against both of them really well. At the press conference today, you know, just selling them the next fight, and that's smart. That's super smart, you know. If he's able to beat Travis Brown, yeah, I mean, why not put him back in? You know, why not put him back into the mix and give him another title shot? I mean, he's been looking good as of late, and why not give him the next? I mean, who else is in line? If Kane wins, maybe Kane, right? But Kane's not fighting for a bit. So let's see what happens, you know? Let's see what we can do here. And I think we've got Dean from Georgia on the line, so let's bring him in. Dean, is this you?
Yes, Proteus, what's going on?
Not much, brother. I was just rambling about UFC 203. Are you excited?
Partially, not because of the freak show or the feature.
Right.
I'm actually excited about the. I'm a fan of Sight Music.
Sight,
I've been a fan. I've been a fan for a while of Sight Music. I like what he represents. You know, he's a. You know, his fighting style, just, you know, his day to day, his humbleness, and just. How his rise to the top, you know, knowing that he actually gives back to his country. He's not, you know, he's humble, he's grounded, you know. So I've always been a fan of him. I think it'll be a fun fight. I think, you know, the first few minutes, he just has to, like, if he could push the pace and stay. I wonder if Overeem will try to maintain some distance and stuff. I think the pressure will get to Overeem, and he'll either hit him with like a second or third round stoppage, or he'll just, you know, I'll freaking grind him out.
Right. I was talking now. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying I'm excited about that fight. And another fight I was calling, I mean, I called into the show early in the week that I'm really excited about is Jimmy Rivera. You know, here is the guy that's, you know, 19-1, you know, favors, you know, has 9 losses and only 2 of them are in non-title fights. But I think this could be his third. You know, here is a guy that's 37 years old. You got this young guy that fought, although he only has 3 fights in the UFC, but he's fought pretty tough people, you know. He's fought, you know, Pedro Munhoz, and then he fought Iori Alcaterra, you know, he's fought some tough people,
right.
some tough guys, you know.
Yep.
So I think he has a really solid shot against Faber. You know, Faber fought against Frankie Sines, and I mean, he won. He looked good. I think Rivera is a better version of Frankie Sines. So I think Faber's going to have his hands full.
Yeah, I said this yesterday on the Smack My Picks Up show that I bet I'm taking Rivera. You know, I don't know where Faber's at. I mean, he's looked solid his whole career. Like, let's give it to Faber. You know, he's been around for a long period of time and he's looked good. You know, he's managing to hang in there. But I don't know how much more he's got. You know, after that loss to Cruz, he looked really dejected and really, you know, defeated in that loss, and you know, he was kind of searching for what's next. I think Faber still has a couple of fights in the UFC that, you know, they can make money off of, but I don't know about this fight. Like you said, Rivera is really interesting, and I'm taking him in the pool, and yeah, I mean, it should be a good fight. I mean, the first two fights, and then skip out that Punk versus Gall fight, and then Faber, and then on Andrade Calderwood, and then Cohera. These fights would be good, and then they've got Tavares too fighting just on under them. There are a bunch of good fights on here.
I almost wish the Andrade and Calderwood fight was at 125. I know Andrade just dropped down from 135 to 115. But, you know, Calderwood tested the waters against Letourneau in Canada at 125. This is a fight. Both fighters could be spitball fighters if they did a 125 division. So
right.
I just kind of wish they kind of entertained that 125-pound fight with those two as well. It's still going to be a fun fight. I just think it would be a more competitive fight. They would have more energy if they both fought at 125 because they're kind of like 125ers. She's small, but when she was 135, you know, when she cut down to 115, I mean, she still looked really good, but she just seemed like she was a little drained. I think for both of them, the 125, if there was that division, I think out of the female roster, those two are some of the fighters that it makes sense. Just like a Jessica Ai, who used to fight at 125. You know, there's a few of them there that, you know, that weight division makes sense to them. You know, they're kind of like a tweener. They're in between the strawweight and the bantamweight division. So if they had a flyweight division for the girls, those are two people that I could see.
Yeah, and Joe Rogan has been talking about this on his podcast. I mean, definitely with when you talk to Cerrone, you know, kind of advising him to stay at 170. I think that this is kind of what we need to see moving forward. We need to see people fighting at a more comfortable weight for them, you know, where they don't have to deplete themselves. Like I was saying earlier on before you got on, that CM Punk looked absolutely terrible at the weigh-in or at the press conference today. He looked like Skeletor, you know. I don't know how this weight cut's going to, how he's going to handle the weight cut. I mean, he's been competing in pro wrestling, but he's never had to do this weight cut. You know, he's never had to cut 20 pounds and not drink water for 5 days, like Donald Cerrone said. So I think what you're saying is really true, Dean, that we need to see fighters fighting at a more realistic weight so that they can, you know, have more punch, you know, power in their punches and be able to recover from this and much faster and fight better. So I agree with you there. Anything else that you see? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think, I mean, he was telling Ariel that he didn't even do a practice cut, so that's probably why he looked so poor. This is the first time he's cut anyway. I mean, if you believe him, I mean, who's to say if he has, you know, that could just be for, you know, if he's trying to, like, go against the gamblers and or whatever, you know.
Sure.
Who's
he is an entertainer first, right? So he's probably saying what we want to hear. So
Yeah. No, I mean, there's that fight I'm excited about. You know, you mentioned the female fight. I mean, I'm always been a fan of Tavares. You know, he's been in the show.
Yep.
He's been on the show. I just like his fighting style. But Magalhaes. I mean, he's going to bring it. He's not going to stand back. He moves forward, so it should be a really fun fight. There's a couple of fights that I'm really enjoying. I mean, I'm really looking forward to. So,
yeah.
And those are a few, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about this Verdum-Brown fight? We said last night that, you know, it's a rematch, but, I mean, did we really need to see it? I mean, I know he's a last-minute replacement, but it was said that, you know, Verdum picked Brown. What do you think moving forward, and what do you think about seeing Edmund on these on all of this promotion for the fights? I mean, do you really think that Edmund's got anything moving forward? You know, like, his team hasn't really done anything, have they?
No, anyone that's went to his team has not had success.
If
other than Ronda, they've had, I mean, she's probably the only fighter that had success. Jake Ellenberger, Travis Brown, there's a few that went to him, and just his style of boxing doesn't cross over the transition to MMA and into the UFC. It hasn't shown that it's, you know, effective. I think, you know, Travis Brown, I think he's jumping in there too soon. He took a beating against Kane at 200. He's jumping in there too soon, just trying to rebound from himself, but he's going to potentially even go deeper down the card. They put Verdum on the card just in case if there is, you know, they try to stack and have another really good fight just in case there's an injury. So then, you know, if Overeem got hurt, they could throw Verdum in there and say, hey, here's this guy that, you know, maybe Stipe got lucky, you know, and they could still throw off the pay-per-view and have a solid main event. Verdum was kind of a insurance plan for that card. So when Rothwell, who I am a huge fan of, cause especially from last year's Junkie Gathering, I mean, he partied with us in the suite, and he blamed, I played bartender and fixed everyone basically fireball shots, and the next morning he was, him and his wife were like, it's all your fault, you know, because he had a really good time, and everyone had a great time that was in that room. So everyone listening, that was in that suite, they know that it was a blast. But ever since that, I've always been a huge, I mean, I've always enjoyed his fighting style, but ever since then, his connection with Junkie, he's been my favorite heavyweight. I just kind of wish that he had, it's always kind of seems like certain things happen and he doesn't get the shot. He was supposed to fight Stipe, back over in Europe, and that dropped. Then, you know, now he's going to fight Verdum. So just, you know, little minor injuries, certain things happening, and he hasn't got the break. But I'm not a fan of the fight. You know, to answer your question, I think Brown, he's jumping into the fight just trying to, you know, redeem himself because he's the athletic, competitive type. But there's no way, like, the way he got beat back in 2014 at the Fox show in Orlando, you know, on 4 weeks' notice, not preparing for Verdum, he hasn't made the adjustment. You know, he just recently trained to fight a wrestler. You know, luckily he doesn't have to, like, I mean, he's a heavyweight, so he doesn't have to train on cutting weight. But he had to do some PR, so out of that 4 weeks, he probably got 2.5 weeks of dedicated fight camp, or 2 weeks of dedicated fight camp, which is not enough to train for someone that's a world-class champion that's been training 10 to 12 weeks. So I think it's a bad night for Travis Brown.
Right. And you know what? Travis pretty much said the same thing today at the press conference, is that he was like, well, I want to I wanted to get back in there after my loss at 200 and blah, blah, blah. And so, and that really rang true to me too, that, you know, yeah, maybe you're rushing just a little bit, you know, maybe you're rushing into this and not being enough prepared or well enough prepared for the challenge that sits in front of you. Because Fabricio has been, you know, besides getting caught by Miocic, I mean, he's been looking real good. I mean, he's a former champion, but his game has really had to really come a long way, you know? I don't know if you can prepare for that in such a short period of time. I mean, 4 weeks, right? And if you take off this week, he's not training this week, right? So that's 3 weeks. And like you said, probably more like 2 weeks. So yeah, I don't think that's nearly enough.
You know, the only thing is Ron to gain some weight. So maybe he ain't trying to chase some tail, you know, and he's actually training, you know, so where he's like,
yeah.
You're not as attractive as you were back in the day. So let me just train.
I didn't want to go there. There it is.
But,
I didn't want to go there.
I went there. She's fighting. She's looks like she's walking around as a welterweight. She's bigger.
Yeah,
she's bigger than damn.
Yeah,
she's bigger than damn CM Punk right now. You know.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, Clearwater went there last night, and we were all like, I don't know. But and then you went there again tonight. Perfect.
I didn't even hear it. So that's what even makes it funnier, because
even
I didn't
better.
Even hear.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't even hear C to the triple B. So
yeah. Okay. Let's. I'm just gonna pick one randomly. Ian McCall is back against. Oh no, that's right. Borg dropped out. That's right. Borg dropped
out. Yes,
and
you know, I was at that 201 card, and he just can't catch a break. You know,
yeah.
I was at the 201 card. I was excited for him to fight Scoggins. Yes, they gave him, I think, his show money. I don't think they gave him his win money. They gave him his show money.
I think they gave him both. To be honest with you,
they did. Okay,
I think so. Yeah.
All right. But, I mean, if they gave him both, then fine. But, you know, he's still not having the opportunity to fight for a bonus. But
right.
If they did give him both, that's obviously in itself is a bonus. I mean,
right.
Who's to say what they do? Hopefully they at least give him his show money. You know, maybe they say, hey, continue to make weight, you get your show money. Because he's just – the last couple of years, he just hasn't had a break. You know, he's had that trying to take that. You know, he's had a couple of ones where the guys haven't made weight, and he went in and took the fight, and he was just overpowered when he fought Lineker, and just things with his friend and training partner. He's had a tough road, injuries and just. His last couple of years in his life, it's really, he just can't catch a break. He's had it really tough.
Yeah, yeah, he really has. You know, with the, like you said, with the injuries and then with his opponents, two of his last opponents dropping out. I mean, and this is a guy, I mean, if you listen to Junkie at all, this is a guy who was thinking about not doing it anymore, you know, and now with these two fights that have dropped, I mean, what's that do to your mental, right?
Yeah, if he's already unmotivated to, you know, that's kind of scary too, because you got to get in the cage and fight someone, you know, at
right.
the highest level. So when you're already thinking about negative aspects and not thinking about, like, I may quit, you know, something like this is definitely messing with his psyche. And, you know, he may consider, I don't know what his options are. I don't know what his skill sets or his education is. But something that he'd probably definitely want to consider, you know?
Right. Well, you know, he's been saying in interviews that he's got his own businesses on the side. So, you know, he doesn't really need this fighting game. But, I mean, if they're going to give him, you know, these bonuses, I mean, well, not bonuses, but if they're going to give him all his money, he might as well keep taking fights if people are going to keep dropping out, right?
Yeah, but you know, but here's the thing is, who's to say what, you know, what is he making? 20 and 20, 25 and 25, 30 and 30,
right.
Probably max.
Right, but it's
better
than nothing,
right? And that's if they
right?
gave him his bonus. It is, but what injuries did he have, you know?
Right.
How much did he pay for his fight camp? How much did he train
right.
for his partners? So, out of the, say, if he makes 30, if they only gave him 30, you know, you take away 25-30% of that. But if you take away 30% of that, now you're looking at 9,000. You look at 21,000. 21,000, then he had to pay trainers and whatever.
Sure.
So now he's maybe near 15, 18, 16,000 or whatever, between 15 to 18,000 that he actually made. I mean, that's still good money for a 12-week fight camp, but, you know, someone at that level and at that thing, that's probably not enough for them, you know, because they're
right.
so used to making so much more. So the modern,
yeah.
you know, and they don't get certain marketing. He didn't really fight for WEC because he came over from
Strike Force.
No, was he over Strike? No, I don't think he was at Strike. Well, he did like want to do a Strike Force, but coming to the UFC, wasn't he like Tai Chi or Palace?
Oh, Tai Chi Palace. Yeah, he was. Yeah,
yeah,
he did
I think he was there. I think he was there because I remember
he tried out.
You're
right. I think he was the champ there. Yeah, and then he came over. Yeah,
yeah,
I think you're right.
Because I know he's 35 weight, but for some reason they didn't pick him.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Had the tough tryouts during the year that I think the Ronda and Misha year. I think
right.
he was there at the tryouts, but they didn't pick him. But you know. Who's to say what business he has, what's going on, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, I like his fighting style. He's very entertaining. I mean, him being a champ, it would be, I mean, I know a couple of years ago, he fought Demetrius to a draw, you know, that fight where it could have easily went, and he should have probably kind of won. Like, who's to say if he was the champion, like, how more exciting would that division be? Because he's trash. He's not like Demetrius, just so amazing athlete, the best in the business. But, you know, someone that just talks shit and like, hey, and gets people excited about, you know, watching his fights. And, you know, look what Connor's done to the division. Just someone that's rather than saying whoever the UFC gives me, he was not that guy.
Right, but so then again, Connor hasn't defended his title at that division, so who gives a shit? I mean, Connor is only caring about Connor.
Yeah, but it's not too long yet. I'm not at a point where I'm like, strip him.
No, but I mean,
they gave him the Aldo fight.
Right?
You do.
We have a contender for him, so. Yeah, and we had this conversation with the fellow that called in on Sunday about, you know, are we going to see more crossover with the WWE, and are we going to see more of a WWE kind of approach to things? And I told them, yeah, they've been preparing us for that. The UFC has been preparing us for this for years, and I think that's the way they want to go, because as we're seeing, you know, even with Bellator, that these freak show fights or these fights that don't really make sense make more money.
Yeah. You know, you have they have an interim, which I kind of think they did that kind of young and prematurely. Was just kind of like
marketing. I think
they
were trying to put pressure on them, though, right?
Maybe, but you know, you have the whole. I argued this before that you know you had the whole Dominic Cruz out for a long period of time. Then it made sense. But like, what about back? You know, 8, 10 years ago when BJ Penn went up to welterweight, how long did he not defend his title? And the UFC was like, you're a star, you know, you're the number one lightweight that the UFC's ever had. Go test yourself, go challenge yourself. And now the guy's pulling the highest numbers ever. They're gonna give him what he wants, you know. That's why he may fight at 205, at UFC 205 against Eddie, you know, because they just showed that, you know, one UFC had 1.5, 1.6 million, and then this one has near 1.7. He is breaking records with stuff that makes them millions and millions of dollars. And
yeah.
$4 billion. So they're trying to recoup whatever they could get right now.
Of course. Of course.
You know, they're not worried about. It's kind of like a similar in the welterweight division. Yes, Stephen Thompson deserves the title shot, which he may still get it, but if GSP wants it, he's getting it.
Yeah.
For the reason, because it makes more money. It's kind of like, right, what's that, back in that movie, Southpaw, and Curtis, not Curtis Jackson, but I think it is Curtis Jackson. If it makes dollars, it makes sense. You know, and that's their WMEIMG view now. They paid $4 million.
Yeah.
They're, you know, yes, they have probably so many plans for globalization and marketing and entertainment business, but they have to try to make some of their money back. And that's,
right,
and that's the key, and that's the most important aspect. So if Conor is the one-man show that could give you the most pay-per-views, they're gonna exploit him. They can't.
Sure. Sure. Okay, so let's move on to something else, because you mentioned GSP. Let's talk about that for a second, because we're seeing a lot of back and forth going on here, and, you know, contract negotiations and shit, so we only get to see, you know, little pieces of it, right? So we only get to see, you know, what Dana White comes out and says, and we only get to see what GSP comes out and says. So what do you think is happening here? I mean, are we going to see GSP in Toronto in 4 months? Are we going to see him at, like you said, a couple of shows ago on the New York, the New Year's Eve card?
I think you're going to see him at 206 in Toronto.
Yeah.
My opinion. I think that makes more sense. You know, they're already trying to stack 205. They don't see GSP.
No.
So it's kind of like similar to me, right? You had a stack. Brock Lesnar and DC Cormier. I mean, you know, they had all these people. So then at 202, they're like, hey, here's Conor McGregor. So now that card by itself, you don't have to throw many big fights on it. You only need like a couple, just a couple to support it. But that GSP fight will sell itself. He doesn't even have to go for the title. He doesn't even have to go for the title. You could throw him against Nick. You throw him against Nick Diaz. They've been talking about that. GSP doesn't have to fight for the title. They could put GSP versus Nick Diaz, put it at 206. I think that would be the main card over, even if at the main one they had Woodley versus Thompson. GSP is going to be the main card.
Of course he is. Absolutely.
With main event, I mean.
Yeah. I knew what you meant.
But
they'd be stupid not to do that.
Yep, and it depends on if they do 205. And that Tyron Woodley and put it there, because if anyone drops out, then it's like, room. You know, if someone drops out, then it's like, okay, let's move Woodley up. If they George, if they have problems with BS, George, now you're fighting for the title. You're already training. If it's a main event, you're already training for a 5-round fight. So what's the difference?
Right.
I mean, I don't think they don't need to throw. I mean, I know Wonderboy trains with Weidman, Sarah Longo, and trains out in New York, and he'd love to be on that card, but they don't even have to. If they're already having a couple of fights, they don't need that fight on that card.
No, I don't think either of those fights. I don't think GSP can't make 205 anyways, right? Because he has to be 4 months of testing, so he can't make that fight anyways. And
I think
and like
be
you said,
206.
Yeah, like you said, I think that they're going to do that at 206, or they're going to do it in Toronto, and they're going to have like a mini tournament, you know, mini welterweight tournament where we're going to see the Wonder Man and Tyron Woodley fight for the belt. And then, like you said, we'll see GSP. And I think, hopefully, to be honest, I would like to see Damian Maia against GSP.
I mentioned this about a week ago. I was like, even when it was a rumor, I was like, if Donald Cerrone beats Lawler, like, just beat a interim champion, Condit, my favorite fighter, so that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But then you're like, okay, Wonderboy beat Hendrix. But if Cerrone, who is a crowd favorite, not Meyer, not Wonderboy, Cerrone, who is a crowd favorite, USC loves him because he's stepped up so many times for them. If he could beat Lawler, I think, my opinion, although it's you know, some people may disagree, but I think he has the potential to at least minimum jump one of them or potentially both of them. If they don't make the fight, if they made like GSP versus Woodley, if Donald Cerrone could beat Lawler, he will jump the other two guys that are ahead of him, which is Wonderboy and Maya, easily. I think easily.
He may. I mean, that's not a crazy thing to say. He may do that. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, here he is. He's on a 3-fight win streak. He fought Cote, who Wonderboy beat, so they both beat him. He beat Story, who was a top 10. So, I mean, because prior to Wonderboy, I mean, he didn't have really a lot of a big top 10. You know, he had a couple of key wins, but he didn't have some really big names. But then he beat Hendrix. But Hendrix hasn't looked greatest. So, you know, I think he could leapfrog a lot of those guys. And I thought about him, like, and it doesn't sound crazy. Like, he is a crowd favorite. People love him. UFC loves him. He, you know, he's has 30-plus fights under Zuffa. He's done so much for the company. And he's excited now at 170 because he doesn't have to deplete himself. Who's the set, you know, the way he's setting up his combos are beautiful. I thought Story was going to grind him out and stuff. Oh, my God, he teed off on Story.
Yeah.
He looked amazing. He looked probably one of the best I've ever seen him look in the cage.
Yeah, and just like Joe Rogan said on his podcast when he had Cerrone on last week. I mean, it's like some Matrix shit, you know what I mean? Like, that combo is amazing, and, you know, Cowboy was very much downplaying it, but, I mean, who does that? I mean, who manages to pull off a 4-hit combo like that and
each one was in a different he switched sides and switched like
levels.
Depth and location
levels, depth,
location and size. It was like left low, right high, right low, left high, or whatever the combination was, but it was just completely opposite everyone from each other. The, like, Story didn't know where to block them. Like, he's getting kicked on the side of the head with a shin, you know. It was beautiful. It's kind of funny when you see someone get knocked out with a combo and to say something that's beautiful, but it's the truth.
Well, we just had a caller that called in from it looked like a Skype number. Caller, if you're still listening to the show, please call back again. I'll put you on right away. I just wanted to let Dean finish his comment, but next time you call in, I won't. I'll go right to you. Cut Dean off.
I'm accustomed to that. I'm accustomed to that.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So you brought up Hendrix and apparent decline. And I've heard this in being discussed on a couple of shows that I listen to. What's up with Hendrix? You know,
I think it's the wars that he had with GSP, the wars that he had with Lawler. It's almost similar to kind of like a JDS. He needs a break. You know, like JDS when he had the wars with Kane and stuff where he just got demolished and he came back and he wasn't the same fighter for a while.
Right.
He needs to regroup and he changed management companies who were managing a company that he was with for a long time. You know, trainers, he changed
camp.
A lot.
Trainers,
all kinds of aspects. And because, you know, he was giving them the management contract that he had, he was giving them a lot of, I don't know the true deal, but
money.
He was giving them a lot of money because they paid for his living when he was not fighting, you know?
Correct.
They kind of gave him like a salary, you know?
I think he was paying them like half of his money.
When he started being big time,
that's
a
right.
lot.
Yeah, you don't want to continue doing that when you're big time, right? You want to keep a lot of that money to yourself. It's like you're bleeding money if you're giving away 50%, you know, and then you're also paying them probably for training as well. You know what I mean? They're just taking that off the top, and then you got to pay for the trainers and all that bullshit. So yeah, I get it. But one thing that really stuck out to me was in GSP's last fight against Hendricks, he did mention that he didn't want to come back until there was better testing. And he did kind of, in my opinion, you know, kind of allude to the fact that maybe his opponent on that night was, you know, on steroids. And that was back in the, before the USADA times. And, you know, if you were an idiot, you would fail those tests, you know, those tests of the night, you know, after you fight and before you fight. So do you think there's anything to that? Do you think there's anything to one USADA, obviously with the steroids, and two, with the lack of IVs?
As far as the Johnny Hendricks' decline, I think that's a big part of it.
That's correct.
I think, I mean, I'm not saying that he's never got tested positive, but I think he's always had the wake-up problems. I mean, he makes some really good points, but he's had the wake-up problems several times, so that whole, you know, help me out.
IV?
IV, the saline solution to try to rehydrate.
Correct.
I don't know if that was one of his methods, but he definitely doesn't seem like the same fighter. I don't know if it's because of USADA or, you know, the new IV laws or the whole training aspect. And it could be a combination of all of them.
Sure.
He's
been cutting weight for, you know, half of his life probably, right, with wrestling and such. So maybe that's catching up to him too, right? I mean, we have to realize that, who was it? Luke Thomas was mentioning on his show today that Chris Lieben now needs to take medication for the rest of his life because he fucked up his thyroid so much cutting weight. You know, this is going to be happening moving forward with these guys. And I've said it before, I think we're going to see a lot of problems with MMA fighters in the future. Like this next generation or two of fighters is going to really have a big problem with what they've done to their bodies to get down to, you know, being a prize fighter.
Yeah. I mean, what they're doing to the body and the kind of, you know, cuts and everything, it can't be good for their liver. It can't, you know, I kind of think,
right.
I kind of wish they almost had, I don't want it to be like boxing where it's every 3 pounds, but at least from flyweight up to maybe middleweight or potentially even light heavyweight, I kind of wish they went by 10 pounds.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
At least up to middleweight, maybe even up to light heavyweight, because it's just hard, because I think they have enough talent and the expansion is so big that they could go every 10 pounds up to 185 easy. Going up to 205 by having the 195, I don't think there's enough talent pool in the where you have enough really big middleweight or kind of some like smaller heavyweights to kind of fill a 195-205 division.
Right.
But I easily up to 185, I think they could be successful. And technically, you're only really adding one extra division. You're adding a 165.
Yeah.
You know, and you're having a 165 and then you're having a 175. You know, so you're really not. And then in the marketing standpoint, you're adding another champion. You're adding, you know, so they could promote that on their card. It makes a lot of sense. And especially as people are trying to fight closer to their weight, because it doesn't make sense that these fighters are going, the smaller weights is 10 pounds, 10 pounds, 10 pounds, 10 pounds, and then it jumps all of a sudden up to now 15 pounds, and then up to 20 pounds, you know?
Right, right. No, I
mean,
agree
I know
with you.
I know they're smaller and stuff, so they're the percentage of a weight cut, and maybe that's the reason why they selected those weights way back in the day, but they have,
yeah.
they didn't have a 600-fighter or 500-fighter roster.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
back then they had a 200, 150, whatever. Now they have the roster, they're international, they're in countries all over the world, they got fighters coming in all over the world. They could easily, you know, accommodate that, and actually only one extra division. You know, look at the fighters that jumped up and had success. The Donald Cerrone, the Jorge Masvidal, and all these other
yep.
fighters. You know, they wouldn't have had to go up to 170. They would have probably just went to 165. And that,
correct.
And then there's those, you know, like who I thought about, like say back in the day, who is like a perfect testament of who was a tweener was like a Matt Serra. If they
right.
would have had a 165 division, he would have been the king. You know, he was kind of small for 170, but he was too big. He needed to stay off the pasta for 155.
Right.
But, you know, for 170, although he was champion, he reached the highest level. Like, if
oh.
they would have did that, I think if he would have did a 165, he would have been the king. He would have
right.
been so dominant.
Just so we can, if we have any live listeners, again, I'm going to give you the call-in number. It's 646-668-8160. And if you're listening on the podcast, think about calling us again, you know, calling in and getting in and on this conversation. As you can see, Dean and I like to talk a lot, but, you know, you're going to get tired of hearing our voices. So let's hear yours, Junkie Nation. And by the way, if anybody is looking to get anybody in Junkie Nation, you want to get in on Sundays on our Junkie interview segment, we'd love to have you. Give us a contact, either myself or DJ Tony. We're on Twitter. I'm on Facebook as well. So, you know, give us a shout. Let us know if you want to get on the show. We'll put you on, man. We want to hear your voices. Okay, so you brought up... you know, 165, and that's another thing that Cowboy Cerrone said on Joe Rogan when he was on last week, that
and,
he really wishes
admit,
there was a 165.
I didn't hear that.
That's okay. I'm telling you right now.
I don't want you thinking.
Go ahead. Sorry?
I don't want you to think I am just repeating the Joe Rogan podcast.
No. No. I'm just backing up what you're saying. That a fighter
yeah.
was on a podcast saying exactly what you're saying. You know, he wishes there was a 165 because he could make 165. You know?
You know, I mean, I agreed. I heard Gigi talk about this. I mean, he's been talking about this for years ago. And it just, and you're not
yeah, he's been
saying
it for a while.
And it makes so much sense, you know, in all aspects of business, too. You know, you just add another division. You know, they got the roster, you know, the 155 and the 170 division. They got killers, like 1 through 50, ranked 1 through 50 or 1 through 40. They're killers. Like, anyone on a really good night could be, you know, a top 15, top 20, you know, top 20, top 15 type guy.
Right.
And you know, in those weight classes, they got, I think on 55, they got near... I think they're pushing the high 70s, 80s, or near 90 fighters on roster. You know, that's like one of their biggest divisions. You know, and the welterweight's the same way. So when you got maybe 100 in estimating, because I don't know the exact number, but say if they both have 75 fighters in their division, now you got 150 fighters between the two divisions. You just put that one in the middle. You still got 50 fighters in each division. It still makes it so
right.
competitive. You're not asking for a lot. And then like who's some smaller like 185ers that would probably cut down to 175? And there's probably quite a few. You know,
well,
where
I
they
mean,
feel they
at...
go, they go against the Rockholds and the Wymans. They feel
sure.
overwhelmed because they're just huge. But if they were going
right.
against guys closer to their self at like a 175 or something like that, you know, they would be a lot more competitive, and you know, have a higher classification in their fights and their status inside the UFC. You know, instead of being top 25 or top 30 or 40 or everything.
Well, let's look at the women's divisions. You know, if there was a 125 division, I think a lot of ladies would go to that 125. You know, I mean, Misha Tate, who was the champion at 135, was a 125er. You know, in Strikeforce, and I think. Go ahead.
You know, I was saying I think the four women that are fighting this weekend all would go to the 125 division.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Jessica Andrade, who came from 135, she's small.
Yeah.
She easily could be a 125. At 125. Jessica I was a 125er before.
Yes.
And the only other one is Betch Carrera, which, I mean,
yeah.
I don't
might
know.
Stay
that
at
ass,
135.
That ass, that, them legs and ass weighs about a good about 50 pounds. But she's up.
Yeah.
I mean, she could probably make it too because she's kind of short, you know. I don't know how
yeah.
that weight would be for her, but she's like the
probably
only
bad.
One that, yeah. She's the only one where she probably would stay in 135, but if they opened up to 125, that's three out of the four fighters on the card, which are, they're all, I believe, they're all in the top 15 in the in the strawweight division or in their divisions. Actually, two are in the strawweight and two are in the bantamweight, but I believe they're all top 15 under UFC rankings, that they would all, other than maybe Betch, would all go down to the 125.
Yeah.
So just
yeah.
that alone, you know?
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
Definitely fighters out there, you know? And then there's, you know, the fighters on Invicta and other different cards that, you know, could, you know, Bob Hornchak, she's their flyweight champion over there. There's a
mm-hmm.
you know quite a few fighters over there on still Invicta that could make it would make a good run in the UFC if they had the ones.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. You know, Invicta is in a really rough spot, are they not? You know, like if you take too many fighters from Invicta, then you run the risk of Invicta dying, and I really think that Invicta is you know the minor leagues for the women because there's not really anybody else doing it, and that's where you know women fighters need to go to get into the big game. So, what about Invicta?
I mean Invicta. I mean they're getting ready to lose their biggest star, right? One
right.
of their biggest stars, Alexa Grasso. But, you know, it's like any other thing. It's like, but what about the fighters from the UFC that are not ready yet for that UFC level? Like, say,
right.
Angela Hill. You know, she went down there and she's been doing well.
Right.
Roxanne Perry, she's doing pretty well down there. So she has to build that name and build up that. Even though Roxanne Modafferi was a veteran, but
right.
she didn't do so well in the UFC, but she's been doing pretty well down there in Invicta. You know, you say that if you could deplete them, as the sport grows, I don't think that's the case. You know, it's like look at RFA or, you know, they've had what is it, 49 fighters?
Yeah, it's been a ton of fighters.
Yeah, they're considered the minor leagues, and they're still throwing a, you know, some good shows. It kind of motivates the fighters, the
sure.
other regional fighters, like, you know, I don't want to go, although, you know, Legacy and you got
Titan.
Legacy and Titan, King of the Ring and CFFC and all these other regional promotions.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, they throw people still in the UFC, but the biggest, you know, platform to get into the UFC in the regional circuit is kind of through RFA. So I feel that Invicta, you know, would have that, you know, kind of could still maintain that status. But with only two divisions
yeah.
and the way they want to grow, they're not going to ever have that.
No, yeah. There's just not enough yet. There's not enough female fighters yet for that kind of thing to, you know, thrive.
And the sport's young and, you know, just
yeah.
recently – you know, they, you know, where female fighters, you know, the true veterans, it took them You know, they would only get like one or maybe two fights a year, sometimes only one fight a year. So
and then
they had to travel.
Sure. Yeah,
they had to travel quite a bit.
Yeah, it's like Dana White says, you know, it's hard to get into the promoting game. You know what I mean? They're really the only guys that have been super successful at it, and RFA seems to have a good, you know, business model as well. And you know, we love the RFA on this show. So, I mean, as I've been saying on this show, that I think RFA wants to be known or likes to be known as a feeder system for the UFC. I mean, look how many fighters they've put into the UFC. Clearly there's talent coming up there, but again, that's because there's more male fighters than there are female fighters. And maybe in 10 years that's going to be completely different. And I welcome it, but we're not there yet. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
we're not even there,
you know. He didn't win, but Cody Bollinger, you know, he took a short notice fight in RFA because it was RFA. They didn't have that reputation a couple of years ago, but just through their recent success and history of, you know, promoting fighters to that next level because of, and part of that is probably, I think a main part of that is due to the relationship with the president of RFA and you know the UFC, because he's managed.
Okay, I'm gonna put you on hold, Dean. Hang on 1 second. We got that caller back. I'm gonna go right to him now, live.
Okay.
Yes, caller, go ahead, please. You are live and direct on Proteus's Primetime Show. Hello, caller. Are you there? 1-2-1-2. Check, check, check. Check the mic. All right, I'm going to put you back on hold and let Dean talk. Yeah, so Dean, that caller does not want to seem to talk, so why don't you go back at it?
All right, I mean, and that topic...
Yeah, he dropped out again, so that number is clearly, you know, having a good time with us, so I'll ignore it next time. Sorry about that. So let's move on. Something else that was in the news lately that, you know, perked my attention was the talk about Benson Henderson and how terrible he's looked in Bellator. And I brought up something. Oh, the caller's back again. Should we try again, Dean? What do you think?
Yeah, sure. It's your show.
All right. Caller, are you there? Can you hear us? Check, check. 1, 2.
Fellas, Clearwater Beach, bad boy checking in. Who's the fucking call screener?
It's me. Where are you calling from?
Guys, listen, that's not what's important. What's important right now is the fact that I am here, guys, that I am live, that I am part of the program. We are in the midst of an NFL kickoff, and you guys are fucking around.
Yeah, well, what do you expect?
Who's playing?
Guys, Denver is up 21-20 with 4 minutes to go. It is a phenomenal opening game. Peyton Manning's egghead is there. John Elway's big-ass teeth. Everything is where it should be, guys. And we had our first non-Colin Kaepernick NFL kneel down of the season, in which one of the top defensive players for Denver took a knee during the national anthem. And guys, there is a rumor out there that says the entire Seattle Seahawks team will be taking a knee during the national anthem, guys. So what the NFL ought to do is start playing the Canadian national anthem and give all those African Americans something to really fucking get confused about.
So C6 Triple B, I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
So what are your thoughts on the Madden curves? I mean, I'm a Patriots fan, born and raised in New England, moved away, big Gronk fan. You know, was this year 17 and Gronk's on the 2017 cover, and he just now recently reported that he got injured. So it was what, this makes every consecutive season? It's crazy.
Guys, I have never in my life played one of those fucking video games, but I will tell you something about Gronkowski. Clearwater Beach Bad Boy had a house over in the West Shore Yacht Club in Tampa. You can Google this bullshit. Two doors down from yours truly, was Gronkowski, which was odd because he never, ever had any ties to the Tampa Bay area, never played college ball in the area, nothing, and he lived here. The amount of whores that would be pumped in and out of that house for pool parties and events, guys, I'm talking about dime pieces, Carmen Electra-looking type broads in high heels and G-strings that would come in and out of his house. Now, you know, Gronkowski's got about like four or five brothers as well, correct?
No idea.
I know he has a couple. I know he has a couple. I don't know about four or five. I know he has like two that I think one, another one plays in the NFL and another one's in college. So I know he at least has two.
The weird thing about Gronkowski's house is the only time I ever went to it, and he only lived there a year and a half, flipped the house, sold it, and is gone, was during Halloween. I went to the door, you know, the Clearwater Beach bad boy. There are a lot of these kids out there when they got cancer, they're dying. They want to do a make-a-wish. They want, you know, I got free time on Halloween. I take these dying cancer kids trick-or-treating. So we go to Gronkowski's house, and a guy comes to the door. This is a true story. And he comes to the door, and it's not Gronkowski. Obviously, in October, Gronkowski's not going to be in Tampa, Florida. And this guy, he was fruitier than a nutcake, guys. I mean, this guy was – he was queerer than a $3 bill. And I says, hey, I says, who are you? He goes, I'm his caretaker. I watch his house. Guys, there's a lot of rumors out there, and you could Google it. Gronkowski might both be on both ends of the spectrum, if you know what I mean. And if this guy is any indication – It could be possible, guys. And I'm not talking about Frank Trigg Fruity where you're not sure, but definitely something a little weird there.
So, listen, Clearwater, we were talking before you came on and had some trouble. We were talking about Benson Henderson and his troubles lately in Bellator. Have you seen any of this? What do you think was up?
Listen, Benson Henderson lost me when he proposed to that big chunky chick after a fight, guys. I've seen single-A baseball players get better-looking broads. He got down on one knee, and I thought he was going to go for a single leg on that chunky broad, and he ended up asking her to marry him. After that, I didn't give a shit. He's not a bad-looking guy. What's his problem? He must need glasses. So that's where Benson Henderson lost me. He could fight in Bellator, King of the Cage, whatever, guys. You know, the Clearwater Beach bad boy goes to the gas station and pulls down better dime pieces. But Henderson, don't care, guys, was never into him. He was a great fighter, very entertaining, but he always bored the shit out of me like Chris Bird is a boxer. I just don't care, guys. I don't care about belts. And I don't care about really good fighters that are boring. I like storylines. I'm sorry. I come from an era where the pro wrestling was, we thought was, I got to see a fucking storyline. And there is a huge difference. And there was a guy on one of these shows the other day, and he says, all you got to do is be able to talk shit. Not even close. Let me give you an example. King Mo talks shit. Nobody cares. He comes to the ring with stupid umbrellas, chicks. He looks like a low-level rap star, like from Crucial Conflict or something. Nobody cares. Conor McGregor, Chael Sonnen, they get on
Crucial
the mic.
Crucial Conflict. Wow.
Totally different, guys. So it's not about talking shit. It's a total package. And you can do that, guys. But I'm more interested in the pay-per-view this weekend to see if they're going to get a crowd shot of Ronda Rousey, guys. I'm into that. I want to know if that's going to happen.
Well,
C Triple B, I was like, you know, maybe Brown's been training because she gained a lot of weight. He ain't trying to fuck that no more.
No, guys, listen, as somebody in college who banged some chunky white chicks, and I'm sure you have a guy who I thought was going to be on your show today, Showtime, or as I like to call him, the Nashville Negro. If there's anybody that's banged a lot of chunky white women, I would say that this would be a topic better left for him, especially, you know, diving in and out of I-10 or an I-95 in those trucks, you know, lot lizards. This guy, I mean, he's had a harem of these broads. But, yeah, you know, but Travis Brown, man, you know, he's one of those kind of guys. I mean, his first wife was a dime piece. This guy always carries big-time broads with him. But I think he's jumping back in there too quick. He wants to get in there and get a win. Guys, if he gets hit here and gets knocked out – he's going to really, really take a back seat to a lot of top contenders.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
Maybe he'll follow in his girlfriend's suit and not be able to eat an apple for a couple months.
Showtime places.
Excuse me?
What's that?
I think Showtime, who did he play for? Did he play in college in Auburn, right?
You know what? Showtime has said on the program several times, other programs,
I think it's
that
Auburn.
He played major college football and that he played in the Arena Football League. But I do not know Showtime's real name, and he has never totally divulged his career, which I would love to know a little bit more about, because it is a small network that we all play in. I would love to know a little bit about more about Showtime. I just picture Carl Malone driving a truck across I-10, guys. That's all I know.
No, I've seen a championship. I mean, obviously, but I've seen it where it was like showed a championship ring. I think he played for Auburn. I think he played in the SEC. And I mean, and I remember seeing pictures of it, like his college days and him. You know, I think he was a cornerback or a safety or something like that. And he was a skilled player. You know, so
guys, he went to a big time college program like Auburn. I went to Clark Atlanta University, a small, historically black college in Georgia. What does it tell you about a fucking degree from Auburn that after you get that with a national title, you're driving a truck?
Hey, he's making a lot of money doing that. So,
what, Quiznos
did, you know?
Wasn't hiring?
No, they got like
the Triple B. What you want to talk about? Tough at all? Have you been watching it? Have you not been watching it? Do you give a shit?
You know, I binge it, guys. I'm interested in this one. I have not seen an episode. I stack them up and then I sit down. I'll pile through seven at a time. I like the aspect of all the champions. I like these type of things. By the way, 2 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Denver up 21-20. Fourth down. Carolina has the ball. But, guys, what I want to tell you is that I like it, but I binge watch it like I do stuff on Netflix. But I have been outside of that show for many, many years. And let me tell you why. I would like to see more of a reality show mixed into it. We got too many. Ultimate Fighter was great because there wasn't fights on every channel. Now you got Titan. You got all these different companies. Before, we were staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning to watch Bodog fights on some obscure channel. Now you can get cage fighting around the clock or online almost continuously, even small shows that you've never heard of. So the novelty has worn off. So here's what I want to see. I want to see liquor in the house. I want to see them put these guys in the clubs, in the casinos. I want to see the drama of Bad Girls Club and Jersey Shore mixed with the Ultimate Fighter, but they don't want their fighters to have that sort of connotation. And to me, that just bugs me a little bit. I want to see them bring chicks back to the house. I want more of what we saw in the first season because I like the reality aspect of it, not tape-delayed fights. I don't give a shit.
Dean?
Hey, I just looked on his Facebook. He played. He has a ring where it's Auburn. It says national championship. So he had a national championship from Auburn. I don't know which year that was. But
now, there was a year, guys, that Auburn went undefeated in which – now, we're all thinking of the Cam Newton year, but there was – and I'm sure he's older than that. But there was a certain time where Auburn went undefeated but was barred from the postseason. And that's when I believe Bowden was their coach. He could have been on that team, and they had a share of the national title. They went 11-0, and some polls had him. It would be very interesting to know because they would have played for the national title, but since they had sanctions year before, they weren't eligible for the postseason. So isn't he due on the show today, guys? I mean, isn't he coming on?
Yeah, he's been held up, and that happens. You know, everybody's got a life, so, you know, not everybody can show up for the show, so.
Yeah, they're struggling right now because they have a crisis identity process because they got the three quarterbacks. They picked up that quarterback that came from that reality show on Netflix from what was that EMCC, the East Mississippi Community College, the junior college champion, the John Franklin, and then they have a 5-star recruit that they brought in, and then another like second or third year. So they're having a crisis identity process going on there with quarterback. They have like three. They keep all. I watched the game when they were playing the other night, and they had all three quarterbacks with their helmets on, and the other team. They thought it was going to be like confusing for the other team, and it was just like who's going to come in the field, and they were just doing alternate plays, but they could never get anything going along and you know, anything, you know, moving forward in the positive direction. So,
Guys, I played against major college universities, none at the Division I level. I played Division II, and I played 1 year of junior college as well. In fact, we won the JUCO national title. I have not seen that show yet, but we won the California national title. And the California national title is considered the best of all junior college national championships. There is another national championship, which the teams in Mississippi and Texas and Kansas and Illinois and New York and Lackawanna in Pennsylvania all kind of battle it out. That is actually where Cam Newton won his first national title before going to Auburn and winning a second national title. He won it at Blinn. So you can win a national title, but there is more than one junior college national title winner per year. So I haven't seen that show on Netflix. Is it good? I mean, do they show a lot of the bullshit?
No, I watched it's just basically a lot of players like that John Franklin III, who came from Florida State and then didn't make it there. It's like just basically a lot of guys that they can't get their, you know, they don't have the SAT scores in the grades to go to these major colleges, or they were in school and they flunked out, and it's just, it kind of gives them, they put them on the right track. But they talked about some previous, they won up, I think, like 3 out of 4 in that, maybe if there is multiple national champions, but they won about 3 out of the 4 national championships in that, you know, so they have the very high, you know, so people that fail out of a Division I school, they go there because they know that they're going to potentially get a second shot.
Or an injury. Sometimes you don't get recruited by the schools you want, or you're behind a guy that's a senior, or you're at a Division I school for a couple of years like Cam Newton, and then you get in trouble. Don't forget, he got busted at the University of Florida.
Yeah.
He was there with Tim Tebow. He got busted. My sister went to college there at the time. He got busted throwing computers out of his dorm room because they were stolen laptops, so they got rid of them. Otherwise, they had Newton, Tebow, things would have been a lot different. He went down to junior college for a year and then came back up to Auburn for 1 year, paid over $300,000 to do it, and the rest is history. So there's a lot of reasons. Some are just guys that live locally, can't afford to go away, didn't get scholarships, and they pay $26 a credit hour and play at a junior college. But it's become to the point where guys will live in Florida like I did and play junior college in Long Beach and then get a scholarship back in Atlanta. So it's not all local. But those Mississippi junior colleges are a different breed. They only let 20 out-of-state kids per year play on those teams. California's unlimited.
It's East Mississippi Community College. The show is called Last Chance U. It's a six-part series. It's on Netflix. Pretty good. It's about, you know, six little episodes, about an hour each. And they talked about, like, the current people. They have Ole Miss quarterback Bo Wallace, Rebels quarterback Chad Kelly, former Alabama defensive lineman Jerron Reed. Like, these are all people that came from that program.
Yeah.
So Bo Wallace and Chad
Kelly. You know, so, well, I mean, there's been a lot of guys. What's his name for the Packers? Their quarterback played junior college. You know, Warren Moon played junior college. O.J. Simpson played junior college.
Yeah. Okay, so C to the triple P, let's get you out of here on this. What's your NFL pick? You know, we've got the first game of the NFL season kicking off, or just ending now, as you're telling me. Who's going to win the Super Bowl? Give us a pick.
If I had to go with a Super Bowl team right now, if I had to go with somebody, I'd take Green Bay and not look back. I just think they're too damn good. They got the best quarterback in the NFL. I think they could put points up. They get better as the season goes along. They could play injured. And that home field advantage is like nowhere else. And guys, watching Cam Newton struggle tonight and not be able to pass, and they still might be able to pull this game out down 21-20 at midfield with 42 seconds to go and no timeouts in Denver. I mean, I could kick it from there. But, guys, they're just not what they should be. So I would take Green Bay and run with it, guys. But I'll catch you on the flip side. God bless.
God bless. Well, that's always entertaining.
I was gonna ask him as long as they'll go.
I'm sure that he would have been very forthcoming with that information.
Yeah, I'd have been like, "All right, show me online."
I gotta
back up your story. 75 yards. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, let's. So, did you weigh in on Tuff when I asked to see the Triple B? I like it.
I've always not say I've always been a fan, but I usually kind of like watch it because, you know, I watch other promotions, you know, like the year
sure
that, you know, Cathal Pendred and all that I knew that they were going because, you know, if you watch Cage Warriors, you knew certain people where they haven't fought and they were kind of expected to fight and they pull a fight and, you know, you could almost kind of predict who, you know, depending on the weight class. And, you know, they kind of mentioned like, hey, here's the 30 people that are trying out. They usually announce that early. Mm-hmm. And then when you stop, if you follow all the other promotions, you could kind of figure out who was who made it to the show. Just, right. you know, if you follow the sport, as, you know, as a hardcore. So, but I like it. I mean, it's going to be interesting that next week you have the veteran fighting. You know, I'm a huge fan of Demacio Page, so hopefully he does well. But I think it's going to be, I think, you know, on paper and you look at it, I think Tim Elliott has the best shot to win the whole program. I mean, the whole, you know, because his fights that even that he lost at the highest level were close.
Yeah.
You know, the first round that he fought against Benavidez, it was a close fight. And then he got caught with, didn't he hit him with like a boa constrictor? He hit him with some strange, crazy submission. I think he called it the boa constrictor. So, I think he has a good shot. But there's other ones, you know, obviously that, and I haven't seen from other different promotions. But I'm excited about it. You know, that Shutu fighter, you know, last night, Dana was calling him baby Sakuraba. He looked just like Sakuraba. You know, he's talented. He's going to be, you know, if they carry him along slowly, you know, I think he could have a career kind of like a Horiguchi. I just thought that they were carrying Horiguchi along slowly, and then they had no one else to challenge Demetrius, and they're like, give Horiguchi Demetrius. And, you know, he was fighting, he had three wins, he was on a three-fight win streak, but he fought against people with a sub-500 record.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's what happens when your champion is so dominant, he beat everyone else in the top 10.
Sure.
But I think this adds some depth to that division that they kind of need, you know. Maybe
right.
some of these guys could take out some of these veterans that are in there, you know, the Wilson Hayes, the Chris Carriasso, you know, so they, you know, you go in there, you get a key win over those guys, or a Ryan Benoit, or a, you know, the Borgs, or the Scoggins, or the Pettis, and they go in there and they get some key wins that at least makes them a little more credible coming off the show, coming from a regional promotion as a champion. It will add, you know, a little more depth to the, definitely add a little more depth to the division.
Yeah, and really the only thing that intrigues me about this season of The Ultimate Fighter is that fact that, you know, these are all champions on the regional circuit. Some of them have been in the UFC before, you know.
Broncos are up 21-20, 21-20, 14 seconds left, 13 seconds left, 12.
Thank you very much.
Looks like Broncos are going to win. No, I'm watching it now in the news.
That's a rematch of the Super Bowl from last year, correct? So that would be a complete reversal of roles there, right? Because Denver won. Yeah, Denver won the Super Bowl. So,
but they're doing they're basically doing it without a quarterback, so.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Peyton's not in this year, right?
Nope, Peyton retired. They had a backup that when Peyton was injured.
I remember.
Brock Osweisler or whatever his name is. I think he went to Houston. And then they had like Mark Sanchez. And I think
right.
he got injured, and they have this other guy, Simeon, or something like that.
I think you're right, Simeon.
Yeah. So here you got this like rookie or a new quarterback. So interesting.
Okay, so I forgot what I was going to bring up, but we were talking.
You were talking about Tough.
Right, and I wanted to transition away from Tough. There's some fights that have been announced. for 205, and one especially that, you know, we're all interested in, and that's Cerrone. And you know, he's fighting Robbie Lawler. And, I mean, we touched on it a bit, but, I mean, this is a big fight, right? I mean, this is a huge fight. And it's a huge fight for Cowboy, like you said earlier on. Like, if he can show out, he's in a good place.
Yes.
Right?
And, I mean, they have him now. They moved him in the UFC rankings. I think
right.
he's, like, number 6 or 7 now. So he's up there. So if he win over Lawler, he's there.
He's right up there. Yeah, you said he could probably get the next title shot. Again,
I would not be surprised.
There's so much in the welterweight division right now. It's like a huge bottleneck. You know, we've got so many contenders, and we don't know what to do with them. And I think this fight is a great fight. I mean, I don't know anybody who's going to complain about it. I'm very excited for it. But we also had you know, Weidman versus Yoel Romero.
Has that been signed?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's – I don't know. Jim Edwards put it out on his Twitter that, you know, Romero was signing the contract for it. But and on the Anakin Florian podcast, it was kind of, you know, who's going to fight Weidman next? And it was said, you know, probably Romero. So I think that's going to go down. So if it does end up going down, what do you think goes on there?
Well, I think Romero got. I still think that Romero got beat by Jacare. I think Weidman wins.
You do.
You know. Yeah, I do. I think. I think if he could survive round one, I think Romero is going to give him hell in round one, and then after that, it's gonna. I mean, Romero.
Right.
You know, there's that whole issues with, I mean, he was getting beat by Brunson for a while. He was getting the whole thing with the Tim Kennedy. He's just,
yeah.
I mean, he's super talented, but I think his age, some of that time off, he's got a couple of little lucky spots here and there. I just think Weidman beats him. If he could definitely survive like the first 3 to 5 minutes, basically the first round, I think he'll be in a good spot against Romero to grind him out. Or I mean, I don't know if I think he could get him down.
Yes.
Although, you know, you got Romero is what, a silver medalist and multiple world champion, but the transition between wrestling and then his MMA wrestling, the transition is not exactly the same. He's still very effective, but I think Weidman, you know, his setups are better, and I think he'll be able to control Romero. I think other fighters have controlled Romero and, you know, either beat him, or in my opinion, I thought beat him. I think Weidman was better than them, except maybe Jacare, that's a close one, but I think Weidman could beat him. And he's going to be, you know, the whole pride about fighting in the Garden, you know, that's the biggest thing in his career.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I know Buffalo Blue put against this a kind of like this fantasy 205 card, and I mean a lot of it made sense, and it was really nice.
Yeah.
It could be a very very exciting card, and a lot of them are starting to come together. You know, the whole Alaia Quinta versus Alves. You know, they already have Kennedy versus Rashad, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, he has as the main event Connor versus Eddie, which makes sense, and I can see it happening.
Yeah,
I mean, that's they're going to the amount of money and effort that they put to have a fight at Madison Square Garden. They're going to come big. I think it could even be bigger than, I mean, maybe not intentionally at first, you know, bigger than 200, but I think on paper, fight by fight, it'll be a bigger card than 200.
Yeah, I think that 200 was a debacle, and, you know, we need to just forget about it.
Yeah,
so
I mean, but they tried, though. They tried. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't.
No, yeah.
you know, this
especially
thing
with Joe Silva's, with Joe Silva's retirement and, you know, everything that we know about what his job was. And yeah, they did try, and a lot of shit happened to that card that, you know,
yeah,
had it not happened,
I mean, they were
maybe would have been a different,
you know,
story.
At the beginning of the year, they were expecting, you know, they had the whole Connor issue going down. They had the whole
right.
Jones issue. They were expecting Ronda there. So, you know, they wanted those fighters on there, and they wanted the rematches or, you know, Misha Tate versus Ronda or Holly Holm versus Ronda, you know, whoever was there. But for certain fights fell apart, you know. So I can't.
Yeah.
Can't be like, oh, well, this card wasn't that. No, they tried. It's just, you know, when people act up or they fail drug tests or they get in trouble, you know, you can't blame the UFC for that. You know, they
right.
tried to put
no, yeah.
the best card that they could ever put together on UFC 200, but I think the UFC 205 card would definitely, I think, would be a better card than, you know, recent history. I thought, you know, when, oh, 198 and 199, I'm like, 198 on paper, it looked amazing, you know?
Right.
What they had together, so.
Well, and let's hope that 205 could stay intact when they do finally announce it. But let's quickly, before we get out of here, because we're going to wrap up, I want to look forward quickly to UFC Fight Night 94, Johnson versus Poirier. I think this is going to be an excellent fight, and I just want to get your thoughts on that one fight in particular. Just to look ahead. I mean, I don't need a prediction or anything. I just want to have a conversation about.
I am,
you know,
so excited about that fight.
Yeah,
that's such a
right?
great fight.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, it's exciting for Poirier because his move up, and he's looked really good at lightweight.
Right.
And this kind of puts him at that next level, that top, not say kind of like near a top tier guy, and kind of tests him at that division. You know, he's had some key fights and he's won, but that kind of puts him like, you know, it's the Johnson that's been in there against the Ferguson, that's been in there against the Nate Diaz, that's been in there against these other, the top of the division that's held his own. So seeing how he does against Johnson, who is extremely talented, if he could do really well, that kind of puts mm-hmm. him in that top upper echelon of the 155, because the only people that beat Michael Johnson are, you know, top five guys.
Right.
Know, the Ferguson, minus at that one stage where Madotti beat him and stuff like that, but after that, it was, you know, it was the Nate Diaz who looked amazing.
Top-notch fighters.
Top-notch fighters, Tony Ferguson, you know. So that fight, I'm super pumped about. You know, that one is like, I don't even want to make a prediction. I just want to enjoy the fight. I just want to watch the fight. Who cares about whatever, you know, the details of it. I just want to watch the fight because it's going to be a fun fight.
No, I agree with you, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, because, you know, I think we're seeing Poirier, you know, pull a Donald Cerrone here. I mean, he's looking really great moving up in weight, and I think that's the right move for him. And in exactly the same way that I think it's the right move for Donald Cerrone, I think it's exactly the same reason for Poirier to move up. I don't think he should be trying to make that 45s anymore. I think 55s is where he should stay. And like you said, I'm excited. And Johnson is not a slouch. And I think right now Johnson is becoming more of a gatekeeper than anything else. We'll see what happens against Poirier. If he can pull off the win, maybe he doesn't keep that moniker from me. But go ahead.
No, I'm saying I think Poirier, you know, he looked. I liked him at 145, but I do like him better at 155. But, you know, minus a couple of fights, you know, when he fought Cub Swanson, I mean, he took that fight on short notice. You know, I think you give them both a training camp back then, I think he beat Cub Swanson.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. He took that fight on short notice. You know, I've always been a huge fan of Dustin Poirier, so but him at 155, if I think he's a different animal. I think more of his training partners at AT&T, you know, they push him and he doesn't have to deplete himself, and he's in there against some top echelon. You know, he was in there at top echelon when he was in at 145 too, but I think the people that he's challenging himself against, he's going against some killers, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing Alves at 155, though.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. That's probably a conversation for another day, Dean. Is there anything you want to push out there? Do you want to do your Twitter, or is there anything you want to... No, I know you don't have Twitter. That's, as soon as I said it, I was like, Dean doesn't have Twitter. Is there a podcast or something that you follow that you want to push out there, or anything at all that you want to say?
I basically only listen to anything associated with Junkie.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't listen to the Joe Rogans. I don't listen to these, you know, was it Tyson Fury or whatever his name is. Or, you know, I don't listen to those. I don't. Sometimes I have a hard time just even catching Junkie live, but, you know, I always make sure
I hit
the rerun. And then, you know, I support you guys because you guys are Junkies, you know. But,
and we appreciate it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the whole John, you know, everything, you know, from the CME to the road show, you know, it's everything that's associated with Junkie. Those are the only ones I really support, so.
Yeah, and that's it, right? We're a family, so we got to support. What I'm going to do then, Dean, is I'm going to let you go. I'm going to restart this song because it's the ending song, and I appreciate you calling in and talking today. And
talk to you later.
Yeah, you have yourself a good night, okay, brother?
All right, take care. Have a good night.
All right, cheers. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, guys. Well, I'm going to go ahead and close. Dean from Georgia, thank you very much. Showtime from Tennessee, we'll talk to you next week. You had some issues with calling in today, and that's fine. We know your heart's in the right place, brother. So, again, I'm going to say the number for calling in. And we always take calls, guys. No matter what's going on, we're happy to take your calls. 646-668-8160. We're just here to talk MMA. You know, I mean, if you're listening to the show, as you know, then we just want to talk MMA, and any new point of view or any other point of view is always a good thing, because sometimes we can get stuck in our own ruts and, you know, just think what we want to think. And it's always good to expand our horizons and get other people's point of views on things. So having said that, we have another show coming up on Sunday, you know, our post 203 show. We'll recap, and I believe Tony is working on guests for that show, and hopefully you all tune in. And I know you're all getting it downloaded into your iTunes or your Stitcher, so we appreciate that you subscribe and listen to all the shows. But yeah, this is a long outro. Follow me at PROADOS, and like that.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.